I'm Brandon.
And I'm Brandon.
And welcome back to Apollo City Comics, your everything and anything podcast. Dang, I always mess that up. What's the slogan, Brandon?
Everything and anything comic book podcast.
There you go. I was pretty much there. All right. Well, we have an awesome episode for you. And this was a very surprise episode that kind of popped up out of nowhere. And, you know, we've been doing spooky season all month. And on our road to our 100th episode, here we are, episode 99, hitting over the trenches. And I'm super excited about today's guest. There's some great stuff he's worked on and some phenomenal things that I think all of you are going to probably have a learning experience with us. But before then, give a quick shout out to Coffee and a Comic. We're doing our book club actually tomorrow. And don't forget to sign up for a pull list. And there's a discount code below. And go give the guy some support. Frank's an awesome guy. He's a good dude. And also, Lesser Known Comics is finishing up their Kickstarter right now. They only have a few days left, and they're just shy of their goal. So whatever you guys can to support them, we have a link below for you guys to check out. But other than that, Brandon, who do we got on today?
Our special guest for the day is Frank Forte, an accomplished designer, storyboard artist, and comic book artist. He spends his spare time with paints, and Frank is influenced by classic cartoons and comic books. And on top of that, Frank is a publisher at Asylum Press. Some of the TV credits would be Lovecraft Country, Solar Opposites, Lego Guardians of the Galaxy, which honestly I didn't even know existed, Heavy Metal Magazine, Bob's Burgers, and many more. Welcome to the show, Frank.
Hey guys, thanks for having me.
Dude, thanks for being here. Thanks for reaching out. We get so many cool connections through Instagram, and I love seeing people network through there and kind of grow the community. And you have a Kickstarter going on. It's wrapping up, just has a few days left, and you've already reached your goal, which is phenomenal because it's a pretty big goal in general with a list of names. Tell us about the Kickstarter. Tell us about Asylum Press.
Yeah, cool. So, you know, Asylum Press, I mean, I work, you know, my day job is a storyboard artist, and that's probably, you know, that's all those credits. Like I've worked in animation, I've worked on Bob's Burgers, Solar Opposites, I've worked in live action, I work in movies, I work in, you know, commercial storyboards. But, you know, I've always loved comics, and I've been doing comics since the 90s. I was part of the black and white boom with Cry for Dawn, Anubis Press, and Faust and Tim Vigil and all that black and white stuff from the early 90s. I was kind of part of that. But then I kind of dropped out. It was really hard to make money as an independent comic book creator. Worked in animation in Connecticut for a while, then moved out to LA in the early 2000s. To try to make it as a storyboard guy, because I heard there was a lot of work out there. You could get a union gig, and that's pretty much what I've been doing ever since. But, you know, COVID kind of brought me back to drawing comics. I had some time off from work, and, you know, I started running Kickstarters. So I've done two Kickstarters earlier this year. I finished off my Billy Boy. I did a Vampire Versus sketchbook, and then I did a Warlash comic. And so this is my third one this year, and it's live now. It's called Halloween Horror Box. And we're trying to kickstart five different original horror anthologies. We have Vampire Macabre, which is like a vampire anthology. Zombie Terrors, which is a zombie anthology. Asylum of Horrors, which is more like a psychological horror type anthology. Eek, which is by Jason Paulos, and that's kind of a vintage black and white retro anthology. And Vampires Number One, which is by Steve Baines, who worked for IDW, did Haunted Horror, Zombies, all those vintage collections of the pre-code horror stuff.
Yeah.
So this is a 32-page book of pre-code vampire horror tales. And the cool thing about vampires is we got Skinner. I don't know if you know Skinner's artwork. We have him doing a variant cover, and it's also available in a metal cover. And so these comics have already been listed in previews. They're shipping to comic stores, but Kickstarter gives people an opportunity to buy like variant covers. We have Not Safe for Work covers, Naughty covers, metal covers. So we have all these cool little variants that I know Kickstarter backers really like. So Halloween Horror Box, it ends Halloween October 31st at midnight. So that's when we end. But yeah, we did a modest goal of 3,000. I think we were up at 6,000, then we got booted back down below 6. It was up to 62, then it went to 57. Like, I don't know. People were like pledging and then taking back their pledges. Now we're back up past 6,000, I think. So we have, 3,000 and 6,000 were stretch goals. Mm-hmm. So we had like free posters for those. So anyone that backs now gets these free two-sided legal size promotional posters that we use to promote the books. So, you know, it's a really cool, you know, it's Halloween. It's this haunted month, October. So it's a great time to check it out. We've got a lot of extras and, you know, you could buy a lot of the Asylum Press back stock or add-ons like Insidious Tales, Vampire Verses, Asylum of Horrors, with Satan's Powder Room, like a lot of the books we did in the early 2000s and even the 90s, we used to have limited copies left. We have those as add-ons.
Oh, wow. Nice. Okay, so you have an arsenal of stuff. I was looking through the rewards today, and I already know which one I'm going to pledge. I think it's one of like the $30, $35 tiers because there's a whole batch of cool stuff you get with it. And that variety you have for this is, I don't know, it's perfect. You're right, the timing, the Halloween like horror stuff. Which, I mean, if you guys are listening to this as this episode comes out, you only have a few days left to pledge to get these. Mm-hmm. If not, you know, contact your comic book shop if it's in previews, and that way you guys could get a copy of it. It sounds like you... Now, everyone that's working on this book, are they just connections you've known over the years? Are these just, like, projects that have just kind of been on the wayside?
Pretty much. Like some of the stories I've had for a while, but, like, Dwayne Harris, I've worked with him at Heavy Metal for years when I was an editor over there. Allie Fell did covers for us, and he did the cover to Heavy Metal 271, which was the Asylum Press special, which is one of which is definitely was a favorite of Heavy Metal fans because of the content that was in there. So I got him on the cover of that issue. Skinner, who I've known since we met at what's that indie convention that was in San Francisco every year that was part of WonderCon and Comic-Con, I forget, they sold it, now it's defunct, but we met up at a San Francisco con, we've been friends. Jason Paulos, we published, you know, an e-compendium, Idu Mena and Mora Mike, and these are some new guys I've been working with. But yeah, just guys like I've collaborated with Heavy Metal over the years, and you know, some new people that I haven't worked with yet. So it's a really, Timothy E. Bacon, like I worked with him and he was in a couple issues of Heavy Metal. He did some stories. Brian Quinn did a story. So yeah, we have a lot of, well, some new people, some old, but, you know, it's a really cool collection. And I know it's like, when you get there, it's like, it's a lot of books and five different titles.
Yeah.
Normally Kickstarter is one title with like five covers. Here we have five titles and each title maybe has like three covers. So it's a lot of stuff, but I figured, hey, it's like an experiment. Can we do a Kickstarter and launch like five different titles at once and make it work? You know, it's a lot of people don't do that. They do one at a time, but mm-hmm. being a publisher, if we did one book at a time, this would probably take us 6 months or more to do it one at a time. So we're just trying to do it together. And maybe people could get used to, hey, if we go to an Asylum Press Kickstarter, we get five books, we help launch five books at once. And, you know, we get a lot of cool stuff with it. So, you know, it's not the usual Kickstarter you would see, but I think you get a lot of value for what you can pledge. And with the add-ons, you can buy a lot of back stock and books. There's digital rewards. You know, we're going to have, you know, Struthers stretch goals will be signed prints. We might throw some stickers in there. So it's definitely a cool, if you're into horror and you're into anthologies and you're into, you know, not safe for work, naughty covers, if you're a fan of One Lady Death stuff, there's definitely a lot of cool stuff there.
Yeah, that's what I love the most about it. And you're right, we don't see that too often. I think lesser known comics, this other small publisher we hang out with and whatnot, they do something very similar with the anthology aspect and multiple books. And you know, you guys are very unique in the game of offering so much content to pledgers, because every time you get it, it's like maybe your next tier you'll unlock one more book, and then mm-hmm. the third tier you'll unlock one more book, but it's never a whole variety for the price you guys are giving it at. And I mean, that's just awesome.
And then there's also, like, if you want to, just so people know, if you want to, you can pledge to a tier, but then you can also kind of piecemeal it together. Like every book is also available as an add-on. So if you want to save on shipping, you could be like, hey, I want this tier, but I also want this book, and this book, because there are so many books. How could you, there would be so many different tiers of so many books. It was hard to like figure it out. So I'm just like, here's a bunch of cool tiers. And then you know what? If you want to piece it together, everything's available as an add-on. So there's nothing's limited. And, you know, if you don't see something, you can always message me. And then there's like one tier, like for $450, you get everything. And that's like, you save $50, but you get like all the books, all the variants and all the sketch covers. So it's, you could get everything. You could get one thing, you know, like the lowest thing is like $5. You could get one book. Or you can get everything for $450, you know, so there's just a lot of stuff, a lot of choices.
Yeah, I was noticing that when I was kind of putting together my little selection that the add-ons are like $5 each. Like, it's really not a big addition for the bang you're getting out of that. How many pages is each book?
The book will be 32. Cool. But, you know, a lot of them, the reason they're only $5 is we're going to do offset. Like, we're going to do print runs of like 3,000, maybe 4,000 for some of them. So when you print that many, you can do them for like $5 because that's what they have to be in a comic store. You know, you can't really, I know most Kickstarter comics, a 32-page book is like $10, 15, 20. And then when you're doing print on demand, you have to charge that because each book costs you like $5 to print.
Yeah.
And I get it. When you're printing like 100 books, you have to charge more. But we do higher print runs so we can charge less, which I thought would get more people bidding. But, you know, like you look at some of these campaigns, I mean, some of these recent campaigns, they're doing like 30, 40, 50,000, 100,000 for some of these. And like Lady Death, just, I think they're up over 200. They might be at 300,000. So we feel like we have a similar type book. If you're into bad girl books, horror books, anthologies, but yeah, for some reason our growth is slow. Like we struggle to do like six, like we're halfway through and we're at 6,000.
Yeah.
Like I feel like we could be doing, you know, at least 15 or 20, but you know, it's just hard to get the word out. I think there's a lot of noise. There's a lot of Kickstarters. There's a lot of content, you know? So, you know, if you look through the books and you look at the quality of the interiors, you know, I think you get a big bang for your buck for a Halloween horror box for sure.
Yeah. I can totally agree with that. That's interesting though. I had never actually done the like really checked out the amount some of these other people were making on that. But how long has Asylum Press been about?
We've been around since 1999. Cool. And you know, we were always indie. We would put out a few books a year. We were never like always in previews. We put out, and then for some of the stuff when we put out Satan's Powder Room and Chicken Soup for Satan, that was like one book a year. And when we would do Fearless Dawn, you know, we were doing like a few, six books a year, maybe, you know, so we've always been kind of small. We're just not the size that can handle huge amounts of, creators and printing. And a lot of stuff is mine stuff. So it's kind of like I'm a self-publisher, but I also publish other people's stuff.
Ah, nice.
Okay. So I kind of just have a very simple, straightforward question with that said. So this is one of those genres, I'll be honest, I'm not too like knowledgeable on when it comes to comic books. You know, horror is one of those things, I've definitely dabbled into it. And, you know, it's definitely something I've always been interested in, but I've never really found the proper book to kind of like really grasp me as a reader. When it comes to like horror and all that, was that something you've always wanted to do? Something you kind of just stumbled upon when creating comics? Or was it just like, hey, let's make a horror book, and then it took off and he just kind of kept going?
Yeah, I think my first comic that I ever published was From Beyond, which was like in 91, and that was a horror anthology. So like I grew up reading Marvel, DC, like that's what I started with. And then when I found like Tales from the Crypt and Eerie and Creepy, I just gravitated to it. I really liked the short story. I always liked Tales from the Dark Side and Twilight Zone and all that stuff. So I always gravitated toward the short story with the twist ending. Like those are the kind of stories I like to write. Those are the stories I like to read. So I was always into heavy metal for that reason, because heavy metal had a lot of short stories in it. Epic Illustrated. They had some serial, some short stories. But yeah, I mean, I always like, I like the Bernie Wrightson collections.
Oh, yeah.
The Richard Corbin collections. Any, you know, collections of short stories from Europe, I always liked, like Libertor or Mobius, anything like that. And just like, maybe I had a short attention span or something. I don't know, but I always liked shorter stuff. But, you know, I liked the Kelly Jones run on Batman. Mm-hmm. And I liked Hellboy. I always read Hellboy. And, you know, I liked Steve Niles stuff. So anything that had a horror,
yeah,
you know, sensibility in the 90s I was reading. I kind of dropped out of superheroes in the 90s. A lot of people like grew up on that stuff. I still read a lot of the Bad Girl stuff, like Cry for Dawn and Lady Death and all that. But
nice.
I moved away from the comics, the superhero stuff, and then, you know, gravitated towards horror, European stuff, European imprints, and, you know, black and white indies.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. That's yeah. Cool.
It's funny you mentioned Kelly Jones, because I could see the influence. I'm pretty sure that's the big influence on Vampires, like the main cover, the one with the cross.
Yeah, that's Skinner. I would say, yeah, Skinner likes a lot of vintage stuff. Like, he likes a lot of retro horror, Bernie Wrightson and Tim Vigil and all that stuff. So sure, I'm sure he's a fan of Kelly Jones, mm-hmm, and all those guys that use brush and ink technique.
Yeah.
And Skinner, he just had a really successful Kickstarter. If you guys look up Skin Crawl, pretty soon they're going to be launching Skin Crawl 2, and that's a horror anthology where he does all the artwork. I think he works with another layout guy, but he does all the artwork in this very vintage brush horror style. Mm. So if you look up Skin Crawl, it's definitely a cool book. But he wanted to do a cover for Vampires because he likes vintage stuff, vintage horror stuff. So I think it's definitely a great matchup of, mm-hmm, you know, Skinner being on the cover of Vampires. And, you know, if you guys like vintage horror, I can't describe it. It's like a vampire. He's got blood coming out of his eyes, and there's a crucifix being like put in his face, and he's just being like crucified to death. It's like a death of a vampire, you know, and it's just like in Skinner's psychedelic, mind-blowing colors in your face style. Mm-hmm. It's really cool, and we're gonna have a metal version too. And if you guys have ever seen metal covers, the colors really just like jump out at you.
And then I'm just curious about one of the variants. So what caught my attention is one of the Vampires variants. Is that a Misfits double lock I'm seeing, or am I wrong?
Which one? It's Vampires number one.
Yeah, if you're looking at the Kickstarter page, it's the second row, last one on the right.
Let me get there.
Sorry, I should have prepared. Probably copy and paste.
Oh, here, I could see. Have you?
So it's which show we're going down again, you guys?
Halloween
Horror Box on Kickstarter right now. So Vampires number one, one of the variant covers. Which one is it?
That would be
the screen share.
Yeah, that would be the one with like
John Solardo or Frank Forte cover.
I can't see that. Let me see. It's the one with the lady in the dress with the vampire kind of like coming at her.
Okay, yeah, that was the one I did.
Oh, sweet.
So what was the question?
Maybe it's just me like overthinking it, but it just kind of looked like it was like a homage to Misfits with like the double lock hair. I was just curious.
Oh, right. No, I don't know if I was thinking about the Misfits with that. It was just I was looking at a lot of old vintage horror covers from the 50s and even into the 60s, although it is pre-code. So it's like pre-54 stories inside. But, you know, I was looking at all sorts of stuff, but influenced by 50s and 60s, you know, horror stuff. Mm-hmm. But it reminds you of Misfits cover. That's cool though. I like
yeah.
The Misfits.
Yeah, well, Misfits are influenced by the same stuff. I mean, they right, that's all they right. love is like, you know, old right. B movie.
Yeah, 50 flicks. Stuff. Yeah. Sure.
Cool. No, that's awesome. I do love these variants and all the covers. They're pretty crazy and they like pop out. Now that we're like talking about horror, the one question that I've always wanted to ask someone that like writes horror comics that I feel like I've never met anyone really until now, is, I guess like, how do you make a comic book scary? You know, I know that seems like a very vague question, but to me, you know, it's one thing to watch a scary movie, but when you're reading like a horror comic, something that's supposed to be creepy or kind of scary, maybe, I don't know how you'd be able to describe the writing process behind something like that.
I know, right? If you don't have the music or the jump scares mm-hmm. to go with it, how do you make it super creepy? I think a lot of it is, you know, the drawings. You really need a good artist that is good with horror. And there's a lot of artists that we use that they're just good horror guys, you know, like, I don't know if a 90s Marvel superhero artist would have the same effect as like a Kelly Jones or a Bernie Wrightson or a Tim Vigil drawing horror. So I think the art choice has a lot to do with it. I think the colors have a lot to do with it too, because if you look at people like Ben Temple Smith or Ashley Wood, or, you know, there's a lot of colors that just color in really dark, muted hues that works. Not to say that something that's like psychedelic and in your face can't work too, if the art is right. And with short stories, we always felt that for the twist, how do you hide a twist? Well, it's always got to be on a flip page, right? It's always got to be on an even numbered page, like a 1-2 page or a 3-4 page. There's got to be some build up to the flip. If you have the flip right there on the facing page, you, as a reader, you're going to go to and go, oh, that's the twist.
Yep.
So one thing, a little trick that we've always used is just having a splash page flip, right? So you flip to a splash page and there's some gore or horror or something right in your face. So we've always tried to do that to give you a little, like, that's your jump scare. And then just maybe, you know, tell people to read it alone in the dark at night would be helpful. But, you know, just creating really dark and twisted characters, I think graphic novels could be, you know, very disturbing. I think a lot of people were really disturbed and drawn in by The Walking Dead. And that's just Kirkman's, you know, ability to craft interesting characters and really horrific events. You know, I know people that were reading Walking Dead and go, oh my God, that was the most depressing thing I ever read, or that was the most shocking thing I've ever read, or, you know, people just couldn't stop reading it, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you can do it. I think it's a matter of reading, you know, looking at Steve Niles and looking at Kirkman and looking at Cullen Bunn and other people that are doing really good stuff, mm-hmm. and, you know, use them as an influence and go back and, you know, read that old House of Mystery stuff that Len Wayne and Bernie Wrightson would do. Those guys came up with some real creepy stuff. That Swamp Thing stuff was, that stuff is still creepy, mm-hmm. you know?
Oh yeah, totally.
That's awesome you bring that up, because Bernie Wrightson is one of my favorite illustrators ever. Like, his horror stuff.
Oh, he's great. Oh,
yeah, his horror stuff is what, like, really got me into that universe. And I read some of his horror comics before I even got into Swamp Thing. And Swamp Thing is, like, my favorite, you know, major character. And just what he was able to do with those lines and his pacing between panels mm-hmm. was perfect. The way he would hide stuff with, like, even like the way shadows felt in his books were astonishing.
I mean, he is great.
And I also love that you bring up, like, you know, the arts, obviously, the art and writing definitely make a good comic, right? The one thing I do like that you bring up is the colors, because I feel like this is something people don't really realize when they're reading comics. Maybe it's just me, but, like, colors kind of evoke a certain emotion depending on the color when you're, like, looking at it or taking it in. So I think when it comes to horror and fear and feeling and being creepy, the type of color you use can definitely evoke those emotions without even realizing it. Yeah, and I think that's something very important that most people don't even realize is happening when they're looking at a book, let alone a horror book.
So, you know, heavy metal is one of also, like, kind of what kickstarted, like, our interest to, like, really, like, push this conversation and everything.
Oh, cool.
Initiated it. How long were you with heavy metal? How'd you get involved with them? Like, that's one of my top, like, submissions that I want to get into and whatnot.
Yeah, right. I guess, like, I started submitting to heavy metal probably late 90s, and I would get rejected a lot. And then, you know, I kept submitting, and I would talk to Kevin Eastman at conventions, and, you know, he knew who I was and stuff, and I would just keep submitting and submitting. And eventually I got a story. I think it was either Detox or Battlefield X. I can't remember which was first, around 2008. And that got in. And I was like, great. You know, I was so psyched to be in heavy metal. And then I kept submitting, and it kept, you know, I think Detox, two episodes of that got in. And I just kept getting little short stories in.
Nice.
So Kevin was aware of me. He was aware of Asylum Press. And we'd see each other at Comic-Con. And one day he was like, hey, why don't you edit an issue of Heavy Metal? I'm like, edit an issue? I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, yeah, you just take over the editorial. You pick all the stories for the issue. You do whatever you want. I was like, really? I was like, wow. It was like a dream come true. Oh, so man. Psyched. So I knew that, you know, I had a lot of Asylum Press short stories. So some of it was stuff that I already published, you know, half of it was like new stuff, and I got some foreign guys, and I really made Heavy Metal 271 be like a vintage heavy metal comic that I would read in the 70s, right? Like some American guys, some foreign guys, you know, short stories, some science fiction, some horror, some black and white, just like a good mix. And that's what I did. And it was a fan favorite. Everybody really loved the issue. And then after I did that, he let me edit 277. And between 271 and 277, I started bringing in more people. And I kind of became like one of the assistant editors. And then when Jeff Krolitz and Grant Morrison took over, I was one of the assistant editors, content editors from 280 up until, you know, beyond 300. And I just recently stepped away just because I had personal stuff that I wanted to do. And Matt Medney and David Irwin, they took over. They were new owners, and, you know, they have their own thing that they were doing, which is really cool. I just didn't have time for it anymore. I felt like I did a lot with it, and I was there for issue 300, and I got, you know, that Mobius story into 300, and I got Duke Mighton into 300, and, you know, Blake Northcott, you know, I curated a lot of the short stories in that issue.
Nice.
But it was great to work with Tim Seeley. Tim Seeley was there for a while, and Joe Illidge and RG Lorena. So it was a good collaboration, you know.
Yeah,
but
that was a good
It was
running.
A lot of work,
yeah.
And, you know, it wasn't, really, there wasn't a whole lot of pay there. So I think I did it for as long as I could. And, you know, now I just really want to work on my own stuff, you know, so I'm doing comics, I'm doing animation. Yeah, I have a YouTube channel called Goon Cartoons. That's another thing where I do original content. I just posted my first NFT. So I'm doing a lot of different stuff, but, you know, it takes time. So you just have to kind of do what you're into, give up certain things, and, you know, try to focus on what, you know, makes you happy, and then just kind of what you're into. Because, you know, comic books take a lot of time, whether you're writing, drawing, publishing. It does take up a lot of time. So you really have to, like, give up certain things in order to do it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it takes a lot of time, and it takes a lot of time to do all of that at once.
Yeah.
Like, to write, draw, publish it, be the guy that writes the checks. I mean, yeah, marketing.
For sure.
Oh, yeah. It's not an easy thing to do, but it's so satisfying when you've got that finished book. And let me just say, that sounds literally like a dream come true to work alongside Tim Seeley and like Grant Morrison and Kevin Eastman. I mean,
it was all those guys. It was definitely a cool time, but you know, it's a lot of work. And then like, Pepe Moreno, he was a guy that was in early issues of Heavy Metal, a lot of short stories. I got his Gene Kong, which was never in English. We got that in issue 278 and 279 and for two issues. And that was one of his serials that, you know, was never in English. He did that Generation Zero, which Epic Comics published, but Gene Kong was never in. So that was cool to work with him and get that in Heavy Metal finally. So I did a lot. I thought it was really, really fun. You know?
That's so cool. That was like my Heavy Metal big era where I was subscribed. I was getting it every month. I think I started at 279, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, cool. No shit.
Yeah. And then I continued to 290, 295 or something.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
So you didn't make it all the way to 300.
No, but it's like always on my, like, it's, I'm going to pick them up. Like, it's always on my list to find those back issues because I love, it was just financial stuff. But I mean,
yeah
those
yeah,
are,
totally.
I have to get them because the Tarna covers, I'm a huge Tarna fan. And
yeah, they got Tarna back, and they're doing a comic with her, and she appears in the magazine and doing short stories and stuff. So that's definitely something that heavy metal fans, they always wanted to see more of Tarna, you know?
Yeah, and I've really dug especially the recent one that I'm totally spacing out the creators on it, but it was the whatever 5-6-part series where she got new armor and all that. That was just, it was good stuff. Really
good
stuff.
Right. I think that was Stephanie Phillips. I can't remember exactly who was in it, but
yeah.
definitely cool, and definitely the fans are excited about that.
And before we get to NFTs, so your short story aspect that you're so attracted to, how do you like really approach long form, or do you just love having a variety, your deck of cards of, you can do kind of anything but real?
I like short stories. I think they're cool. But you know, it is hard to make, it's hard to have a company that just does anthologies. So I do have like Warlash is a character that I'm doing some longer form stuff. And I've got a bunch of new characters that I created that I'm trying to finish off the stories. So Asylum Press will be doing longer form 4- and 5-issue miniseries that will be collected into trades that will be longer stories. Again, they will be supernatural, kind of horror-esque type, you know, works. Not really superheroes, but more like dark supernatural, paranormal. We've got a Mad Max type character. We've got some science fiction. So it'll be stuff like that, like nice. Indie, but longer form characters that you can relate to. And you'll also be able to follow them and do like, we'll be putting them out like Hellboy.
Cool.
Miniseries collection. We'll always do the anthology, but it's just hard. We need some staple, you know, anchor characters at Asylum Press that people can relate to.
Yeah.
And I'm not ready to announce them. We have their names. We have the issues are like the 5-issue series are almost done. And if you guys like horror and sci-fi, they're really cool. But, you know, we're probably going to kickstart them too. Even though the art's almost done, it's always good to, like, for a Kickstarter, have the art done.
Yeah.
Like with Halloween Horror Box, most of these are done. So it's not like we're going to flake out and not do the books. We just have to, we're a small company. It's always good to have a little extra money for printing and marketing and shipping and warehousing and stuff like that. So anything that, you know, backers can help us with is definitely appreciated.
Nice. That's I really like your kind of business plan behind all that and your operations, the way you're, you know, your angle behind it's really great because I love that variety. I love that aspect of getting a bunch of horror at once. I've slowly turned into a horror fan over the years. And like my fiance and I were doing a whole like vampire month countdown and we're getting the vampire stuff we can right now.
Oh, I love it.
So this was like really perfect timing for me to be like, fuck yes, I'm going to pledge to this. Like I got to get my hands in all this. You've done movies and films. What are some of your, you did Lovecraft Country.
Yeah.
What did you do? Yeah,
Lovecraft Country was cool. I mean, I was one of three storyboard guys on that.
Gosh.
And, you know, all the effect scenes when you're working in live action, all of the visual effect scenes need to be storyboarded. So the creatures, any death scenes, any transformations, anything that has a ghost or blood or anything like that, they need to storyboard it so that they can send it out to, you know, visual effects for bids, just so they know how much it's going to cost. So, you know, that's what we did. You know, I think there's some samples on my website. If you go to, my storyboard website is frankfortestoryboards.com, and you can see some Lovecraft Country samples there. But it's basically, you know, you work with the director, you work with the, not so much the writers, it was Kevin Blank, who was the visual effects supervisor. I worked with him and the directors to try to visually communicate the script so that the producers could look at it and be like, yeah, you know, we need this, or this is in the budget, or this isn't in the budget, and how many shots can we do this in where it fits in the budget. So it's really like if we just help the directors and producers visualize the show.
Oh my gosh. I don't know if Brandon and I don't think we've ever really talked about Lovecraft Country when it was coming out and whatnot, but I mean, I was addicted to that show. And
right. I've seen a lot of people really loved it.
The transformations you're mentioning, like man, even that first scene in the first episode with Cthulhu coming out, when Ruby kind of transforms and all the blood and guts are peeling off of her. Right.
I think me and Josh Shepard storyboarded some of that. Like there was a couple of transformations. I think I did some and he did some. So that was kind of fun. Anything I could draw blood and gore is always fun.
That all
I'm
makes sense
enjoying
now.
Enjoying myself.
Now knowing your background, I'm going to rewatch that and just see what I could point out from like that 50s like EC Comics type of horror, because that's what really pulled me in, was that just it was gory as hell. Like
Like the scene in I think episode 2 where they did the ritual in the house. Yeah. I storyboarded all that. Shoggoth attack in the woods.
Gosh.
I storyboarded that scene. That was episode 2 or 3 when the car slams into the wall. I storyboarded that. When they're under the water in the cave and they go under the water, I did that scene where they come up on the bloated dead body, a bunch of transformation scenes, the burning, the Tulsa bombing. I did that scene, the fire scene. Yeah. I pretty much touched almost every episode. I think there were 13 episodes,
something like that,
10
yeah.
or 13. I touched like a little bit of all of them. So it was definitely, it was cool. It was definitely fun.
Hell yeah. Dude, that's
part
that's
of something like that. Yeah. Cool.
Are you a big Lovecraft fan in general? Like,
oh, I grew up reading Lovecraft and loving, Reanimator and From Beyond and Dagon and all those movies. Like, I love Reanimator. From Beyond is one of my favorite movies. Yeah. And, you know, even Evil Dead 1 and 2, I mean, that's basically inspired by Lovecraft, where they find the Necronomicon and reading passages and it's calling up demons. I mean, that's all Lovecraft stuff. So I grew up, you know, loving and reading all the Lovecraft stuff. A friend of mine just bought me a huge book of the complete Lovecraft. Like, it's like all his stories and a couple of stories that were never published before or something like that. So it was cool to like go back and reread that stuff and then read stuff that I haven't seen before. But yeah, I love the H.P. Lovecraft.
Alan Moore's Providence, I don't know if you've ever gotten to check that one out. That was like one of his, with Jason Burroughs, and the art of that one is dope. And I think that's one of the comics that got me really into like Lovecraftian horror, was just his monster designs are so creepy. And I don't know, you might dig it if you haven't checked it out already, but it's
I think I flipped through it. Yeah, I like a lot of the that's Avatar.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Does that yeah. I like a lot of the Avatar stuff.
Yeah, Gory's crossed all that crazy, insane over the top stuff. But so you were also saying you dabble with NFTs now. Now, I'm not too fluent in NFTs.
Yeah,
I don't
no idea.
No clue
how they work at the moment.
Yeah, could you break it down? And what do you do?
Yeah, dude, if you guys put in your podcast that you talk about NFTs, I think it'll get a lot of views, because anything that is podcasting or YouTube about NFTs, people are going crazy. So NFTs, people are like, what are they? Non-fungible token. What does that mean? It's a link to a GIF or a JPEG or a piece of art or a video that you're saying, because it's on the blockchain and it has a link, a definite link and a history of it, that it can't be copied. So even though, right, a JPEG could be copied a million times and put somewhere, what the blockchain is saying is that you are actually the owner of the original, or not so much the original, but you're an owner of this NFT that you can buy and sell and trade and keep. Huh. Now, some NFTs are one of one, some NFTs are one of 10, like a series, or you could have one of 20 or one of 30, but the most popular ones are the one of one. And to learn about them, just go on OpenSea. That's the most popular, OpenSea.io. Just look up CryptoPunks. Just look up some of the series. Look up at the top trending ones. A lot of them are just like they create these interesting characters. Like, there'll be 1,000 or 10,000 different CryptoPunks, and they're all a little different. Or Women of the World, or there's like Metasaurs and dinosaurs, or like these ape ones. And so there's just like It's almost like, think of it as a digital blind box, right? People sometimes bid on these. They don't even know what they're getting. And then when they get it, they're like, oh my God, I got this one. And I got this one. And I got, you know, number 257 of 10,000. And then people show off what they have in their, you know, on OpenSea, you can have ones that you're selling and ones that you own. And people like to show off their collections. Mm-hmm. And you use Ethereum to buy them. Uh-huh. And yeah, some of them go for $30 and some of them go for $2 million. It's just, mm-hmm. it's just crazy. So but there's like... all sorts of cool, it's just a new way of selling, you know, an artwork that's a digital asset that anyone can go there and buy. Like you don't have to go to a gallery or buy it. And I think people like the fact that they can show off their collection. Where if you had a collection of paintings, you can show that off in your home, but how else are you going to show that off?
Yeah.
Here, if you look at someone's collection, you can see what they're into, what they're buying. And there's a lot of discords and people are into it. So on my thing, it's OpenSea. If you just, I think if you look up Frank Forte, I'm not sure. I just launched them actually today.
Oh, cool. Nice.
Perfect timing.
So if you look up Frank Forte, if you search on OpenSea, does anything come up? Do I come up yet? They kind of look like vintage,
let's see,
you know, vintage cartoons. And I'm curious if I even come up.
So if I type in Frank Forte, we get.
Yep, see,
let's see.
I got some weird Frank Miller stuff.
Yeah, I got Frank Miller. Okay.
Yeah.
Nothing under me yet. Maybe it's just like too new. What about Frank Forte art?
Let's try that.
Let me check that out.
Still Frank Miller.
So I know I'm opensea.io/Frank_Forte_art.
Nice. Okay.
That's my page. So you can see a few of the things that I did there, and I'm going to be uploading more stuff today and tomorrow. But you could see the stuff that's on there, and it's original.
Oh, cool.
Paintings of mine. But that's not, I don't know if this is the stuff that's super popular. It's more of like, you know, 1,000 characters. So I'm working on creating a bunch of like characters.
Uh-huh.
Because if you look at, you know, CryptoPunks, there's like 10,000 of them.
Yeah.
They're all different. Or Women of the World, there are like 10,000 of them. So you use like Photoshop and you create layers and then you send it through a program that generates 10,000 versions using your art assets. And that's what kind of people are into. And they use the Discord to buy and trade them. It's like a digital blind box. Yeah. That's
so cool. That's real interesting. What a sci-fi thing to emerge. You know what I mean? Like that is the most futuristic, like out of this world.
Digital
stuff.
Goods, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's crazy how they, you know, I've had friends like talk about them and I had a general idea of what they were. They're kind of like, you know, you have the rights and ownership of like some digital art form, basically. Kind of.
Right. Right.
And it's crazy how it like influences things. Like for instance, this is the most crazy obscure example, but you can't watch the Charlie Bit My Finger video on YouTube anymore. That famous video with like the Charlie bit me line.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's an NFT now. And someone bought it. And it got taken down YouTube because of that. It's crazy.
That is hilarious.
Well, I don't think, when you buy an NFT, you know you don't. I don't think you transfer the rights. So whoever owns that video still owns the rights to it, whoever filmed it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But right, early video memes like Nyan Cat and early stuff are popular. Like that's kind of a meme that, you know, or a video or probably that dancing baby from the late 90s is probably an NFT. I don't know why it was taken down off YouTube, but it's interesting.
I saw an article talking about the original. I could be wrong, right? I read the article randomly one time. I could be completely off, but like from what I read, it said something like it was going to be up to a certain date and then it was going to get taken down. But like I said, maybe my information is a bit off, you know, like,
but that would make sense.
Do people want to to show that on OpenSea, or I don't know where it's where it's located or how you
Oh yeah, I found the article right here. Charlie Bit My Finger is leaving YouTube after 760,999 NFT sale.
Wow.
Oh.
And that article is from New York Times, so I don't know. Like, maybe their information's off, but I'm just saying, like, NFTs are taking off like crazy.
Yeah, that's like the new crypto, like, currency, like, boom that's probably going on right now. Well, would Asylum Press ever dabble into stuff like this in the future, like, as to raise funds for
things? Asylum Press, I think Asylum Press would have its own OpenSea account for sure. Nice. I think we need to start doing that. Mm-hmm. But for now, I literally just today, October 19th, 2021, I just launched my my personal art NFTs. After that, now that I figured out how to do it, and it's a little complicated, like, you got to be like, you know, you need to buy Ethereum. So how do you buy Ethereum? Well, the first thing you need is like a Coinbase account or something like that. Mm-hmm. Then how do you get to buy, you know, on OpenSea? Well, you need a wallet. So you need a Coinbase wallet or MetaMask. A lot of people use MetaMask. Ooh. So you have to transfer money to Coinbase, then buy Ethereum, then transfer Ethereum to your wallet. And through your wallet, you buy on OpenSea. It's a little complicated. And I was like, my head was spinning. Like, but once you do it a few times, you watch a few videos, you check it out
and all that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just get down the routine.
Kind of figure it out. And Coinbase is where you can buy Bitcoin and Solana and other digital currencies. And that's what people do if they just want to buy currencies. Mm-hmm. But if you want to buy digital goods, you could do it on OpenSea. And there's a lot of other marketplaces opening up, like Rarible and something X, it's called. So there's other marketplaces that are opening up. So I don't know. I just think it's kind of interesting. And I think people are Ethereum rich, right? Like, when you see something going for like Ethereum is now up. One Ethereum is like over 3,000.
That's insane.
When people sell something for like 10 Ethereum, they're like, holy shit. But I think they just made a lot of money on Ethereum and they got all this Ethereum and they don't want to bring it back to cash because they think, you know, they'll get taxed on it. Mm-hmm. So they just keep investing in more Ethereum and digital goods and they want to keep, like, I don't know, just seeing where it goes. It's so new. It's crazy.
It's interesting. So with how, like, the comic book market works, you know, they print a certain amount of physical copies and then, you know, you buy it at the shop. And then, you know, if you want an old back issue, you kind of have to go through eBay and kind of bidding and all that. Can you see NFTs kind of being the future for digital comics in that same sense where they create a digital comic and there's only like maybe 20,000 available? So then after all those have been bought, the only way you can get one is kind of like the same process getting a physical book. You kind of have to, like, bid for one digitally.
It's a good question. I don't know. Like, right now, an NFT, it's usually just one image. Mm-hmm. It's either one JPEG or, now you can unlock stuff. Like, you can buy it and then unlock something. And an unlockable item can be like a link to a comic.
Ah.
So you can do that. But yeah. Like, right now, you can't upload a PDF, but I think these other sites, eventually, you're gonna be able to do that. Like, you sell a PDF, you know, of 10,000.
Uh-huh.
But right now, the hot items are the one of one, like the unique items.
Yeah.
So I don't know if somebody will want to buy something one of,
5,000, 10,000,
yeah,
20,000.
Yeah, I don't know. It's not like the hot item. It's unique stuff.
I see. Wow, what an interesting, like,
I never really thought of something like that until now. So
yeah, that's cool stuff. That's super cool. And I'm excited to see how this goes for you. I'll, you know, we'll put a link in the bio, of course, so that people can check it out and kind of learn more about it. And you basically gave us a step-by-step guide to like Google and look into and do some research. So it's one of those cool things, like, if you jump on now, I'm sure it's gonna be a lot better than if you wait 5 years and start trying to get into this market. But wow, okay, so how do you find time to do all this? Like, what was
I have this no idea. Yeah, that's a good question. I try to get up as early as I can. And, you know, I'm always a little, I always feel like I'm a little behind in trying to catch up, especially if I'm doing storyboards on a show or a commercial. Mm-hmm. So I'm always real busy and tired. And comic books do take up a lot of time. So you just got to kind of put stuff aside and, you know, do it.
There you go. Honestly, and I figure that's advice for any creator out there trying to get stuff done right now. It's just like, you got to sacrifice and just put everything into it, or else it's just going to just keep sitting there.
Do you, I know time is of the essence when it comes to making the stuff and all that, but do you ever come up with, like, you know, an original idea or some sort of something to create, basically? And do you feel like you wrestle with this whole, well, okay, I do all these things. Would this be a good TV show? Would this be a good movie? Would this be a good comic? Does it get a little jumbled where you're like, maybe I could do a little both to connect the two?
Yeah, I think it's hard. I think it's hard to sell a TV show, even though I'm not here in Hollywood and I've had agents and I've pitched a lot of stuff. You know, it's not easy. There's a lot of scripts being pitched. There's a lot of comic books being pitched. There's a lot of, I mean, you look at previews every month, there's like 1,000 titles, maybe more. And there's probably 10,000 comic book IPs, you know, along with book IPs, original scripts, web comics. I mean, there's so much content that, like, when it comes to me for comics, I just want to create the best comics I can. If somebody wants to make a movie out of it, cool. I'll take stuff out and I'll pitch stuff here and there, but I'm not like looking to create a comic just so I could sell it to Hollywood. I think it's hard. If you could sell one comic in your lifetime to Hollywood, you'll be doing good. You know, forget about, like, someone like Frank Miller, he sold a bunch of stuff, and you know, they sold Hellboy, but I don't think any of those other characters did their own series. So like, even Mike Mignola hasn't sold like Lobster Johnson as a series. So I mean, it's just hard. You know,
of course.
So I usually, when I create something, I create it as a comic because I know I can get it done. With Hollywood, you could be like pitching a script for years and almost get it done, and then it won't get done.
Yeah, it's
so
just,
it's like
that market is insane. It's that creator industry, if you're going in that direction, is probably the, I don't know, it's hard to measure the difficulty because skill sets and whatnot, but
it's also cutthroat.
Cutthroat. Yeah, that's probably the
best. I mean, I've seen a lot of people pitch comics or scripts and they go through like 5-10 years of pitching and rewrites and rewrites, and then in the end they're like, oh, we're gonna pass. And you spend all that time rewriting something and changing it to a producer spec or a network spec, and the script changes and it's not the same script you did. I mean, if you just created it as a comic book, it would exist and you could have people reading it and enjoying it instead of going 10 years of development hell. That's what I think is tough with Hollywood, you know, and any comic book or script will get changed to meet the standards of either a TV show or a feature film. It's got to be edited and put into a screenplay format to work for a 90-minute movie or a longer series. So it's going to get changed anyway.
Yeah.
But, you know, I just like the comic book medium because you could get it done. It's in a tangible form. I mean, I have so many ideas. There's no way I could get anything out if I just pitched them as TV shows. You'd never get anything made, you know?
Yeah. There you go. Yeah, honestly. And it's all that independence, honestly. I could see how that's driven your whole career. Of you got that drive and just to get up and get this stuff done, because that's a lot you have under your belt in general.
Oh, totally.
It's remarkable. Well, what are you reading right now? What's on your on your downtime? Like, do you have downtime?
Yeah, right. What am I reading? Like, just hold on a second. Like, I just picked up this thing. I know people can't see it, but it's Bacon and Other Monstrous Tales by Troy Nixie. So it's like a hardcover collection of, which looks like, you know, short, creepy stories, you know, some black and white, some color.
Dude, that looks, you know, so cool.
Yeah,
hell
yeah. Awesome.
Yeah, it's a Dark Horse thing.
Nice.
You know, I'm one of those guys that I read, you know, like, I got tons of 2000 ADs and all these comics that I buy, and then I really don't have time to read them, so I buy them and I flip through them. I got a backlog of books that I'm like to be read, and I can't read them. I'm just like, I'm just too backed up. I was reading Paper Girls, which I really liked. I bought a bunch of first issues, like Monstress, and a bunch of other stuff. And I read the Hellboy shorts when they come out. And it was Dawn versus Hellboy. I read that because that was a short thing. But I was reading that Wonder Woman thing by the Black Label Wonder Woman by the guy that did Space Mullet, Daniel Warren Johnson.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, Daniel Warren. Yeah, I didn't get to read that short, but I gotta check that out. I didn't realize he was in that book.
So I try to do it, but really it's like it's tough to find time.
Yeah, no, totally. Yeah. I'm in that same boat where I'm trying to get through the backlog of comics I've had stacking up for years basically, and just been bouncing between projects. So it's like,
right,
I just want to get rid of it, but I got to read it at least once before I get rid of it somehow.
Yeah, totally.
I think if you're a comic fan, like it just happens. You want to read everything. You get excited. You almost get this buzz when you buy a new book, you know, like it happens to everybody where it just piles up and you read like an eighth of it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. But damn, whoa, that was so much information, Frank. Yeah. You have so much going on. Kickstarter
stuff going on.
It's doing great. Like, I can't wait to see what comes out of Asylum Press. I can't wait to put in my pledge in this week. I'm just waiting until Friday.
Thanks, I appreciate it. Totally.
I'm pledging as well, so I'm excited.
Yeah.
Cool, man. Yeah, and like I said, you know, if anyone out there is listening, Halloween Horror Box, it's on Kickstarter now till October 31st, and Asylum Press, asylumpress.com. We're on Instagram, Twitter, and we're in previews, so you can check us out. But we'll be running Kickstarters a few times a year, so if you like horror and you want to see some of our new stuff, you know, follow us, sign up for our newsletter on our website, and you know, we'll just be coming out with a lot of cool stuff. And if you know you like the indie comics, Asylum Press, that's what we are, totally indie, you know, dark stuff. Where we don't really do tights and capes. We have some, you know, dark characters coming out, but you know, if you like the indies, definitely check us out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, do you guys do conventions or anything at all coming up or anything?
I think we're going to do Comic-Con Special Edition in San Diego.
Nice.
And I think I'm going to do LA Comic-Con, which is coming up. And I think that would be it for this year. But yeah, if you guys are out on the West Coast, Comic-Con Special Edition San Diego and LA Comic-Con.
Nice. We do that. Might be at LA Comic-Con. So
yeah,
if we are,
okay, there might be a chance. Who knows?
Yeah. So if we do make that trip, dude, we'll go say hi and hang out for a bit.
Yeah, that'll be awesome. We'll be around, definitely.
Before we go, I do have one last question that can be kind of quick.
Sure.
And it's just for those aspiring creators out there listening. I love to ask people this all the time because I feel like it's always like unique, different answers every single time. But simply, you know, being someone who's worked on an array of things, you know, TV shows and movies, and comics and art, it's just, you know, given that you've worked in, you know, different fields since the 90s, if you were able to give yourself advice, you know, when you first started, what would you honestly tell your younger self, you know, the very moment you decided to make this a career? If you could go back and tell yourself.
Yeah, I think I jumped around a lot with different styles and I tried to do a lot of different things. I think I probably would have stuck with one style and tried to make that work instead of jumping around, because I've done, you know, I did worked in haunted houses and I worked in comics, but I worked in a cartoony style and I have a realistic style. And, you know, I kind of am one of those guys that does a little bit of everything. And I think it's important when you look at people like Peach Momoko or, you know, Mirka Andolfo, like they do one thing, they do it really well. They're super popular, you know, like Kelly Jones or Kyle Hodes or any of these guys, they just draw in that their style. They're known for it. They do it really well. They have a huge fan base and they always have work. I think that's kind of what I would, you know, tell myself is like, stick to one thing for a while instead of jumping around. But I kind of have ADD, so I don't know. I don't know what can I say? It's just like, that's kind of how my brain works, you know?
Yeah, no, that totally makes sense. Yeah. And it's hard to kind of, when you want to do so much and you can, I mean, why restrict yourself at that point, you know, like stretch it to every boundary. Also, before we take off, does like Asylum Press take submissions? How can people, is it just people you network with? How are
you
doing?
I think we're always looking for artists or people that do short stories or that can deliver like a completed short story the way heavy metal would, you know. They kind of really want short stories completed on spec.
Yeah.
So if it's kind of like a short story like Black Mirror or Tales from the Crypt or Tales from the Dark Side, we'll always take a look at that stuff, but we're not really taking a look at too many longer series until we raise more money and can actually put it out. So we don't want to like put out a series where it doesn't get the marketing budget and doesn't get the numbers where creators are like, hey, what the hell, you know, published our book and we only sold 2,000. I mean, it's really hard to sell. Yeah, an independent comic would only sell like 2,000 or 3,000 if we put it out. But, you know, there are companies like Aftershock and Vault that really know how to market it. They have the people, they have the clientele, and they could really get the stuff out there.
Yeah.
But for me, it's just, I'm small. I'm a one, two-man operation. We freelance it out. It's just harder for me to get those kind of numbers, you know? So we really just look for like short stories at the moment.
Okay, cool. Dude, that's awesome. I'm glad that we could tell the fans that. And I mean, again, I look forward to everything you guys are putting out. Can't wait to get those books in my hands. And, you know, hopefully we get to say hi in a couple months.
Yeah.
This was
Definitely. I'm excited. That would be great.
Yeah.
Thanks. I appreciate it, guys.
Cool. Thank you so much. And check out all his links in the bio. And Frank, hope to have you on again soon.
Yeah.
Anytime, man. Anytime. We'll do it. When we have a new book coming out, we'll come on.
Hell yeah.
Yes. That'd be perfect. Well, damn. Thanks for hanging, man.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for being here.